Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Workers going union in America, the big jump since October. Meanwhile, a major ruling from the National Labor Relations Board on captive audience meetings. And today, on the show, the president of the Mississippi Teachers Federation and our labor lawyer, Joyce Goldstein. Welcome to the Friday, April 8th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a number of platforms and growing, just to name a few: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We have a newcomer from the state of Mississippi. Geraldine Bender is her name, and she is president of the American Federation of Teachers in Mississippi, the state federation. She's got more than 25 years of experience in education. She says she has a passion for education. Started out in the Jackson Public School District. She's still located in Jackson, Mississippi. And her bio includes a writer and co-writer for the Jackson Public Schools in French and in German. She's fluent in both. Co-director at Jackson State University of the Summer Writing Project. She also is involved in the Student Success Trainer Program, which is affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers. Geraldine has spent most of her career as an advocate for quality education for Mississippi's future and their children, and now works to ensure that the teachers are properly being paid so they get the quality education. And that's a big issue in the state of Mississippi. The average teacher salary there, and this is the 2019-2020 academic year, $46,843. And that lags behind the average of $55,205 for teachers in the 16 states of that region. The national average is $18,000 above that, $64,133. Get this, the starting salary for a Mississippi teacher with a bachelor's degree, $37,000. Mississippi has long been an impoverished state, and these numbers truly reflect that. And because of the low pay, in fact, they did a survey on this, and Geraldine's going to talk about it. Over half of the teachers may leave within the next year. That's how bad it is. They just can't make ends meet. So we'll talk about that and what the future holds in the state of Mississippi when it comes to education. Joyce Goldstein will be joining us. She's one of our regulars. We partnered with her several years ago, four decades of experience in labor law, Joyce Goldstein and Associates. And JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com is her website, by the way. And there's been so much going on in the world of labor. Number one, what we're going to focus on today is Amazon. It was a week ago that the workers at the Staten Island, New York facility voted 55% for the union. So now what? And that's why we're bringing Joyce to the table today, because there's an uphill battle, and already Amazon is filing objections based on what they call the inappropriate and undue influence by the National Labor Relations Board. And then the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, that's going to take a while to accomplish. And she'll kind of give us the background on how that is actually accomplished. The other story, and this was pretty significant, what came down yesterday, the top prosecutor at the labor board, Jennifer Abruzzo, decided to make a ruling saying that captive audience meetings are not legal. This is monumental. Monumental, she said in a guidance memorandum to field staff that compelling attendance at anti-union meetings suppresses workers' organizing rights. Whoa! I'm going to get into more detail on that in a couple of minutes, but that's one of the things she's going to touch on. So Joyce Goldstein will wrap up the show today as our second guest. Speaking of organizing, listen to these new numbers. Just days after workers voted to unionize at an Amazon warehouse in New York City, new federal data show that people want votes on the formation of unions at their own workplaces. The number of petitions for union representation jumped 57% in the first half of fiscal 2022. And that's compared to fiscal 2021. What's fiscal? That's the year that starts in October. The government uses that. So October of last year until now, a jump of 57% people wanting to join a union. That is 1,174 petitions filed from that time, up from 748 the same stage in 2021. Meanwhile, allegations of unfair labor practices increased 14%, said the board. We talked about this yesterday with the iron workers. In one election, this is in Morton, Illinois, they filed 125 unfair labor practices just in one. Now, let me point out, these petitions that we're talking about, this big increase, they don't necessarily mean the end result will be a unionized workforce. Let's make that point pretty clear. But nonetheless, it's showing what's going on in America. Petitions seeking union representation need at least 30% of workers to sign, and many include many more signatures. A September 2021 Gallup poll showed 68% public approval for unions, which is the highest reading since 1965. In 1965, it was 71%. And the NLRB framed the data on Wednesday of this week as justification that they need more money. Right now, according to Jennifer Abruzzo, she is the general counsel there, right now, there is a surge in labor activity across the nation with workers organizing and filing petitions for more union elections than they've had in the last 10 years. While this has caused a significant increase in the caseload, and the agency urgently needs more staff and resources to effectively comply with our congressional mandate. Now, Congress has been giving the agency the same $274 million for 9 years, with no adjustment for inflation. And even this happens as the staff shrinks at the NLRB. Now, President Biden, he has made his support for unions pretty clear, including telling the North American Building Trades Union this week in Washington that a decision on whether to unionize should be workers' alone decision, their own decision, referencing his satisfaction with the outcome of the Amazon vote in New York. So the Biden administration wants $319.4 million for the agency in the next fiscal year, 2023. So that's a bump. Again, it's now $274 million. He wants to take it up to just shy of $320 million. Now, getting back to that ruling yesterday by Jennifer Abruzzo, she said that the meetings, captive audience meetings, inherently involve an unlawful threat that employees will be disciplined or suffer other reprisals if they exercise their protected right not to listen to such speech. She went on to say, I believe that the NLRB case precedent, which has tolerated such meetings, is at odds with fundamental labor law principles, our statutory language, and our congressional mandate. So her memo, again, that came out yesterday, according to some observers, sets out the boldest initiative yet of her tenure at the labor board as the top cop. Whoa, this is amazing. She's getting all kind of accolades from the progressives and, of course, the conservatives. They're not too happy about this. Once again, here's a Virginia Fox. She heads the Republican Education and Labor Committee. And she said, this infringes on free speech. Well, obviously, the free speech for corporations, right? She said the NLRB was tasked by Congress to serve as a fair and neutral arbiter in administrating the National Labor Relations Act, but its partisan advocacy under this administration suggests that it's currently acting in stark contrast to this mandate and as a front group for powerful union bosses. There's our friend. I'm being facetious, Virginia Fox. Turning to the building trades now, the North American Building Trades Union, better known as NABTU, held their 2022 legislative conference this week, and they took some time out to celebrate their victories over the past year. In addition to President Biden's remarks, conference attendees heard from Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, Marty Walsh, the labor secretary, and a number of members of Congress, labor leaders, and their champions for working people. And Sean McGarvey, the president of NABTU, thanked all the members for their hard work on many issues in the past year, from the continuing COVID-19 pandemic to keeping critical infrastructure working. And he said the members did whatever it takes to get the job done in the face of paralyzing fear and anxiety. You did it heroically, humbly, and without fanfare. So thanks to the building trades, they kind of summed it all up in this piece they sent out to all the members and something that they showed on a video at the conference this week. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
In the last 2 years, COVID-19 has dramatically changed our lives. Businesses and schools shut down. People sheltered at home. Hospitals were overwhelmed, and millions of lives were lost. But through it all, you and your building trades brothers and sisters never stopped. With skill and pride from coast to coast, you kept supply lines open. You retrofitted factories. You maintained power generation for hospitals, industries, and homes. And you strengthened health and safety standards. You also stepped up and helped others, serving on the front lines, building temporary medical facilities, feeding healthcare workers, and delivering water. And once a vaccine was ready, our affiliates, councils, and locals moved into action. You offered over 5,000 training centers and union halls as injection sites for public distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine. No one was surprised by your dedication to this country. At NABTU, we want you to know how grateful we are. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for showing the world what it means to be part of a union. Thank you for being the very definition of what it means to be an essential worker and for caring for everyone in your community. You've shown that determination to the world. You've demonstrated that the building trades unions and our movement are essential on all fronts for economic recovery and growth, now and in the future. For over 40 years, North America's building trades unions have been educating, advocating, and fighting for our nation's leaders to come together and pass a bill to fix our crumbling infrastructure and to support our economy and its workers. Thanks to you, our collective voice was finally heard this past November, when President Biden did what others before him failed to do, signed into law a historic, bipartisan, $1.2 trillion infrastructure investment. This law means good jobs for millions of workers.
The bill I'm about to sign a law is proof that despite the cynics, Democrats and Republicans can come together and deliver results. We can do this. We can deliver real results for real people. Because I want to thank organized labor who understands this about jobs. You all stood up. Jobs, 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 jobs.
Yes. And NAB2 members are ready to work those jobs. It's our movement. It's our moment. Our members are ready to rebuild America's roads, bridges, water and wastewater networks, ports, electric grids, dams, and more. Our standards ensure high quality, safe, good paying union jobs with benefits and retirement, giving opportunities to the underserved while growing the economy. And our vast, world-class training infrastructure will put hundreds of thousands more workers on secure pathways to the middle class and provide better lives for decades to come. Never before in NAB2's history have so many members, signatory contractors, and programs aligned. We have a president and vice president that believe in unions and the working middle class and are delivering for them with major policy wins just over a year into their term. It's not just the new infrastructure law. The president signed a new executive order on project labor agreements for federal construction projects that will mean an estimated $262 billion in federal construction contracting for nearly 200,000 union workers. And his Department of Labor, led by the building trades own Marty Walsh, has restored the almost 100-year-old federal prevailing wage law to its original purpose, protecting the hard-earned wages of construction workers. It's our movement that builds stronger communities. It's our moment to build back North America. You've shown America how to do that for generations. You did whatever it took and never let up throughout the pandemic. You are and will continue to be the gold standard.
Again, that was played at the North American Building Trades Conference that wrapped up a couple of days ago in Washington. There was also a call to action service day, and that was designed to raise funds to support Ukrainian refugees. Definitely a noble cause there. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going down to Mississippi to check in with the president of the Mississippi Federation of Teachers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Speaking of teachers, let's go to the state of Mississippi. Joining us from Jackson, Mississippi today is Geraldine Bender, and she is the president of the Mississippi Federation of Teachers, American Federation of Teachers affiliate. And she's got more than two decades, 25-plus years in education, and she's got a fight on her hands trying to raise teacher pay in that state. Geraldine Bender, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Doing wonderful, and thank you so much for having me. And yes, we are still trying to raise teachers' pay.
I was reading earlier about half the teachers are thinking about leaving their profession, and I know Mississippi is not alone. We're hearing the same thing here in the state of Ohio. It's really sad, and you think about a profession where you are shaping young people's minds forever. Come on now. What's wrong with these lawmakers? But before we get into the talking points, talk to me about your union involvement there. This is not what you call a really union-friendly state, the state of Mississippi. It's a right-to-work state. So if you can talk to me about your path to the point where you are today as president of the state federation.
I started locally with the Jackson Federation of Teachers, working with them and going to school board meetings and watching the scenario play out, is what I call it. And I just wanted to be a part of truth and sharing and making sure people can see beyond the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of clouds floating around.
Oh,
and
I
you just
you.
Have to get them out of the way.
It's not an easy job. How many members altogether in the state of Mississippi with the AFT affiliate?
We have about 4,000. The main organization here is MAE, because they are on college campuses and we are not. So they are recruited just as they come out. But anyway, we're good. We are working hard. We're strong with that. We fought. We've been striking before the strike law came along, where they made it illegal to strike.
Mm-hmm.
$25,000 fine if you talk about striking in Mississippi.
$25,000 fine, even if you just talk about striking?
If you're talking to someone trying to encourage them, hey, let's go on strike.
Oh, my. That law is still in effect there?
The law is still in effect.
Oh, my. Where are we with teachers? I was reading earlier about the so many teachers thinking about leaving the profession because of pay, low pay. And I know it's been a tug of war with your legislature. There's some people that support raising the pay. But you got a long way to go. Can you give us some numbers right now?
I sure can. They did pass a teacher pay raise and talk in terms of raising a person's salary from 0 years. They would make $37,000 a year now. And with the new pay raise, they'll go to 41. Now, I want to share this with you, though. The law passed where the state troopers with less than 4 years can now make 46.9, but less than 4 years. It would take a teacher 10 years to get to 46.9. Do you understand what they are proud of what they've done? They are proud of the pay raise, but then look at what they do.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't need 4 years of education in college to be a state trooper, do you?
No, you do not. But their pay scale jumps above a teacher. And she or he has to struggle for 10 years in order to get equal pay.
Now, did you bring this conversation up with the lawmakers when we were trying to raise the pay for the teachers?
This happened after the signing of the bill.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, they were careful. That was after the signing of the bill. And one of the things the governor did say to all the legislators in the room, that they all got there by way of a teacher. So, but we're still fighting. If that's true, if you really feel that, then respect us with a respectable pay.
So, Geraldine, let me ask you, are the teachers still thinking of leaving? Is that enough to keep them on their jobs? I mean, the polling shows that they're pretty frustrated with the wages down there and probably the benefits as well. Where do they stand right now?
They're still in that mode of not coming back. So many of our teachers left and went to neighboring states took out apartments and different things just to make more money. So we were asking for $8,000 and a $2,000 incentive pay for those teachers to return to the state that left because we have such a shortage.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, we didn't get what we asked for. So it's not going to affect teachers staying if they find that it's more money somewhere else they're going to leave. This is not that catch-all, oh, it's so great, we're going to stay, we're not going to go.
What about the parents in all this? Obviously, the parents want to make sure they have quality teachers, teachers that have some tenure on the job experience. They're shaping their kids' future here. What are they saying about all this, Geraldine?
They're not pleased because we have an abundance of substitute teachers in the classroom. I'll give you one. A sheriff or chief of police, they're all talking about, oh, we'll sub in the classroom, but you're not a certified teacher. How are you going to sub in a math class and you know nothing about math? But that's the kind of situation we're faced with. That's why they went with the pay raise, think that that might change. But we're loaded with substitutes. We're running out of them.
You bring up a good point about certification. If you don't mind, I want to talk about that because I've heard this in various states because of this dilemma here, the fact that teachers are not getting what they deserve when it comes to wages and benefits. They are leaving the profession, and as a result, the states have to lower the standards to bring new people in. In some cases, maybe you don't even need a college education. Do you see that happening in your state?
No, not in that realm. What we do have is if you're going to go into the field of education, you have to have a 21 on the ACT. Now, that's one of those situations where that you're the only major that has to have a 21. If you want to be a scientist or a lawyer or a doctor, they don't require you to have a 21 on the ACT before you can even get into the program. And that's what cut our teachers short.
I see. All right.
Yeah. But anyway, we are very short on teachers because our students are not going into the profession because they don't want to have to work a second job.
I hear you. Oh, yeah. Many of them doing that. Not just in the state of Mississippi either. Geraldine,
right.
I got to take a quick break. Geraldine Bender on our live line. She is president of the Mississippi Federation of Teachers, affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers. Before I forget, we're going to have Randy Weingarten on the show on Monday. Randy, just getting back from Poland, and she was dealing with the Ukrainian refugees over there. That just shows you what unions do. It's amazing. Joyce Goldstein will be joining us later in the show. Lots going on in labor. Again, the National Labor Relations Board saying that captive audience meetings are illegal. Wow. Like I said, there's a new top cop in Washington. A lot of good things happening for workers. We'll be back in a few minutes right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. AFLCIO.org for more information. And those of you who went to that website, thank you, because it was a monumental day in history yesterday when the Senate, by a vote of 53-47, voted to confirm Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson onto the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, she is not going to take that position until the fall when Stephen Breyer officially retires, but that was monumental. Joining us on our live line from Jackson, Mississippi today is Geraldine Bender. She is president of the Mississippi Federation of Teachers. They have about 4,000 strong down there. Geraldine, I meant to ask you earlier, did you catch any of the news, the live reports yesterday from Washington? Quite a significant day in history, don't you think?
Yes, it is. A wonderful day in history. It's letting you know possibilities are there. It can happen.
Yep.
It can happen, and it did.
You never know. Maybe one of the students in the state of Mississippi will eventually become a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. That's anything can happen in America.
That inspiration is there. That inspiration is there.
Yes, it certainly is. It certainly is. You wanted to mention something about your lottery, state lottery there, and how that's connected with funding. Can you explain what's going on there, Geraldine?
Yes, it's one of our state representatives had been pushing it so that we could fund education. And as you know, when our legislators are running, education is the top of the list. So when we got the bill passed, it's broken down this way, that all monies that it's collected up to $80 million, the first 80, goes to infrastructure annually until 2028. Anything over the 80, up to 80, will go to education until 2028. But the roads and bridges came first and education came second. And if the $80 million is not there annually, then whatever is in the fund will go to education. So it's a wonderful thing to have a lottery based on education, but I just needed you to see how the proceeds are going.
Infrastructure first and education second. So that's how they how they frame this. That's quite fascinating. Well, we need good infrastructure. I mean, we support the building trades. I get that part. You want the school buses to be on good pavement, on good bridges. I get that part, but, you know, I don't know about that. All right, let's get into a little bit of curriculum here. I know there's a tug of war, not just in Mississippi. It's happening all around America. What you can teach, what you can't teach. I mean, it goes on and on and on. What's the situation there in the state of Mississippi, Geraldine?
Well, one of the issues we have is with the social studies curriculum that is being proposed. They're wanting to change segments in history and the way that they refer to it. For an example, if for you're in the second grade, they want to take out an objective that tells you to identify rights and responsibilities. They want you to define tolerance, recognize values as something good, recognize leaders as the ones that make the rules. You earn money by working. Little snippets like that, not a long explanation, is just what we are giving the kids now. For an example, one objective in the seventh grade removed was summarize the work of enslaved African Americans who led others to freedom. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't want to do that. That's not the thing they want to do. So we have this tug of war on what they'll ask you to do, analyze Reconstruction reforms and something that contributed to the economic realities of African Americans. Seventh grade now. They are wording it in such a way that, first of all, why are we trying to change history? Why are we trying to change? Instead of calling Harriet Tubman by name, leave the names out. Just persons who work toward helping others. So it's just, I don't know.
So, Geraldine, it sounds like they don't want to identify the people that made significant changes for the better in our history. Is that what's going on there?
Right. Listen, they want to take the role of the AFL-CIO out. Remove that when you're talking about industrialization. So how are you going to get kids ready to go to work? But you don't want to talk to them about the AFL-CIO.
So I take it the word union is a pretty dirty word down there then.
Oh, definitely. Yes, it is. But this is one of the things that you were going to wake up the next morning and find out it was law. But it got out, and we were able to request a hearing. And I went in, well, several of us did, and spoke about it. So they put it on hold. But my fear is, now this is one I'll keep working, is instead of it being a state mandate, they may throw it to each local district. And then the districts can do whatever they want.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's always a battle to fight.
Oh, yeah.
With the American Federation of Teachers. Always out front on it.
Never ends.
No, it doesn't.
How politically active? I know you don't have that many members. There's other unions in Mississippi, too. I'm just wondering how politically active you are in the legislature to try to change the complexion there so we don't have to be talking about this on the show.
They know my name. They know me when I come. That's how active I have been fighting this. I started when they gave teachers $1,000. Pay raise. And I talked about the insult that was to the education profession. And I'm always there during the legislative time. And when I met with the Speaker of the House, Philip Gunn, he was really, really excited about what they were proposing as a pay raise for the teachers. They call it a plan for teachers by teachers. And I'm excited that the teachers will get $5,000 this year instead of one, but it still doesn't take them where they need to be. So in order to use cutting the income tax as an excuse for putting money in educators' pocket, it's so amazing that they would try to find a way. It's something they want to do anyway. And that's where I am politically. I will say, if that's something you want to do, do it, but don't do it on the backs of teachers, pretending to give them a little bit more money on their paycheck because you're going to lessen the income tax that's coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's an insult, no doubt. Geraldine, we're going to have to wrap it up on that note. Geraldine Bender is her name. She is the president of the Mississippi Federation of Teachers, affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers. And Geraldine, you got a lot of fight in you. Please stay in touch with us on these issues. I know this is not easy dealing with your legislature. At least you got a bump in the teachers' pay there. We got a long way to go. That's why you're the right person for the job. So hang in there, stay strong, and stay safe, okay?
I will, and you do the same. And thank you for having me on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein, back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Well, as you know, there's a lot going on with unions in America. Starbucks locations now over 200. 13 Starbucks have gone union. And a week ago today, in Staten Island, New York, the union, which was independent from the AFL-CIO, the Amazon Labor Union, their workers voted 55% to join the union. But that's just the start. We got a long way to go. Let's go to our live line right now and check in with Joyce Goldstein, who for more than four decades has been doing labor law and doing a great job. JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com. Joyce, how are we doing today?
Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy. I'm seeing more and more people go in union, but there's still a struggle. And let's start off with Amazon, because right now Amazon, well, they're not going to take this sitting down. I read a statement that they are evaluating their options, including filing objections based on the inappropriate and undue influence by the National Labor Relations Board. Can you tell us what might be going on here? What do you think?
Sure. So the National Labor Relations Board, as a federal government agency that oversees the implementation of our fundamental labor law, is, of course, supposed to remain neutral in any election. They don't support the union. They don't oppose the union. They are just the government agency that is implementing the act. In this case, what the NLRB did was, shortly before the election at Amazon, they sought what's called a 10J injunction. They went to federal court to try to correct a previous violation of the act, so that they believed had occurred. And what that was that Amazon had fired an employee who was a union activist. Amazon said that they had legitimate reasons for doing that. The board, the NLRB, felt that they didn't. And the government has the ability to go after what are called extraordinary remedies to try to prevent violations of the act. And so one of those is they can go to federal court to get an injunction in a case like this, to get an injunction to say, hey, Amazon, you are no longer allowed to violate the act and you need to reinstate this worker while we actually litigate the case to determine whether you committed an unfair labor practice in firing them in the first instance. So that was the backdrop, was that there was this 10J litigation over the injunction about reinstating this employee, and that was going on at the same time as the election. And so Amazon and a lot of other businesses that are allied with Amazon said that the very fact that the NLRB was conducting the election at the same time that they were going after the injunction tipped the balance in favor of the union, that it undermined the NLRB's position as a neutral. And so that, I think, is, and there may be other things, but that's what they've at least claimed in the media has been their biggest concern, is the role that the NLRB played.
So, Joyce, this sounds kind of complicated right now. I have to ask this. Is someone other than the NLRB going to unwind this? Because if the NLRB is being accused of wrongdoing, I take it this will end up in a court and maybe even the U.S. Supreme Court? Is that a possibility?
Yes, that's definitely a possibility. These issues procedurally can come up in a number of different ways, but they could file objections to the election, as you indicated. They could also, which those objections would go to the NLRB. The NLRB would then rule on them one way or another. Then ultimately what could happen is that they could just refuse to bargain with the union. So if the NLRB goes ahead and certifies the union, the election victory, and certifies the union and demands that that Amazon begin bargaining, Amazon could just refuse to bargain and what's called do a test of certification, basically set themselves up to have an unfair labor practice charge filed against them. And then they would lose the unfair labor practice because they're refusing to bargain. And then that would give them the opportunity to appeal it to the federal courts of appeals. And that would be either, because this case is in New York, they could either go to the Second Circuit or to the D.C. Circuit. They would skip the district court level, the trial court level. So, yes, it could easily wind up in a court of appeals and perhaps even to the U.S. Supreme Court.
It's interesting you bring that up about refusing to bargain with them for a contract, because we had a conversation yesterday with the iron workers in Illinois. They voted for the union, and they are refusing, the company's refusing to bargain, and they filed, to date, 125 unfair labor practice charges. That's how many. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Wow. All right, let's move on to the big decision yesterday, and this comes from Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel, or the top cop at the NLRB, saying that captive audience meetings are not legal. Wow. Joyce, what's your thoughts on this? This is pretty significant, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This is really huge. This captive audience speeches have been permitted at least since 1948, when the NLRB found that they were lawful. And so these captive audience speeches are one of the anti-union employers' favorite tricks. And this really is a big deal for the NLRB to potentially restrict employers' use of captive audience speeches.
So what was her reasoning on this? I mean, this, again, very significant ruling. This changes the dynamics when it comes to the right for employees to unionize in their workplace. But what did she base this on?
Well, so let's go back and talk about what are captive audience speeches and what she said in the directive that came out yesterday. And what came out yesterday, just to say, is a memo that is directed to the field staff all across the country who work for the NLRB that said, you know, keep your eyes open if there are unfair labor practice charges that are filed over these captive audience speeches, you should take action against them. So that's what happened yesterday, was this guidance to the field staff. And what she said in the guidance was that captive audience speeches, which she talked about, are either formal speeches where an employer brings employees into a room, into a place, and makes them all sit there and listen to a diatribe against the union, why the workers shouldn't vote for a union, support the union, why a union's a bad thing. those formal speeches that employees are required to attend are captive audience speeches. Then she also said that with the individual supervisor, coroners, an individual employee at work to kind of give a similar talk, that that also is a captive audience speech. And what she said was that those speeches are inherently threatening and intimidating, that they are inherently threatening, and that the National Labor Relations Act promises that employees have the right to either engage in or not engage in union activity. They have a right to listen to or refrain from listening to messages and information regarding unions, and that when employers force employees to listen to this, that they are inherently threatening those employees, that if they got up and walked out, that they might be subject to discipline or other kind of adverse action. And so what she's saying is that if these meetings are going to happen, that they have to be voluntary. It has to be voluntary. Employees need to know that they are not obligated to attend or to listen to these kinds of messages. And that raises all sorts of other questions. You know, if, you know, is it voluntary if the employer still pays for the time that employees attend? Should those meetings be unpaid? Isn't it inherently coercive if, you know, if they're still being, even if, you, if the employer says, no, you don't have to be here, but this is your work time to do it. You know, there are questions that will come up, but this is a great first start. This is a really big deal.
I can only assume there's going to be a test case on this, because companies like Amazon, they're still going to go ahead with these, and they do until told don't. And even though the top cop is saying you can't do this kind of thing, it's illegal. Don't you see that happening down the road, that this is going to be challenged?
Of course, it's going to be challenged. And, you know, whether it's by Amazon or other employers, of course, it's going to be challenged. I mean, this, as I said, has been the law for the last 48 years that, or 45 years that they've been allowed to do it. And so I don't imagine that this is going to change easily. But this is an important first step. But yes, I'm sure that there will be employers that'll continue to do it, and it will be tested. And, you know, one of the interesting things, too, will be what happens when an employer does have a captive audience speech and the board finds that it is unlawful. What will the remedy be? And yeah. I know you've talked, you know, you've talked on your show about reviving Joy Silk, for example. I mean, will the remedy be that, you know, employers, if they engage in captive audience speeches, that they'll ultimately be required to recognize the union anyway, because they destroyed the possibility of having a fair election? Will employers be forced to bargain if they do it? Will employers be obligated to give unions equal time? Will it be like, you know, in general elections where both sides are given the opportunity to have their say? Raises a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah. It's funny you bring up Joy Silk. You must be listening to this show really, really closely, because we brought that up on the show yesterday with the iron workers. This is the same group where 125 unfair labor practice charges have been filed. And they're considering, they're saying, hey, Joy Silk needs to come back. Let's save that maybe down the road. And because I know you know labor law and the history of labor law, but that would be a good segment here on the show. So, Joyce, thank you for your analysis. Lots of things happening in America right now. Joyce Goldstein and Associates. You can find more at joycegoldsteinlaw.com. You take care, stay safe, and we will talk to you in May. How's that sound?
Great. Thank you.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. On Monday, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, just back from Poland, where she was helping out the refugees from Ukraine, and the postal workers out of Detroit. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.